Eugene Volokh needs no introduction, but let me just say, for those who landed from Mars yesterday, he teaches law at UCLA, and he's the ringleader of a team blog called The Volokh Conspiracy. Eugene Volokh, it has that page, has the feel, I would say, of a kind of supercharged coffee house. The argument is mostly about law cases, Supreme Court and the Michigan affirmative action case or the Texas sodomy case, for example. But people are also talking about opera librettos, I noticed today, and politics and web technology, free speech, all of these things. I keep wondering, was there ever a space for this intensity of chatter before weblogs?
Well, it's always hard to compare media this way. I suppose you're right that it's something like a coffee house or maybe something like a conversation around a dining room table that people talk about the things that interest them. In a sense, that's actually more natural for humans, I think. Very few of us decide, okay, over dinner we're only going to talk about law. And when we do decide that, then most people don't want to have dinner with us anymore. We generally say, you know, we'll talk about whatever strikes our fancy and strikes other people's fancy. And unfortunately, with other media, the need to satisfy lots of paying customers had made it important to focus on those things that we really think a lot of the customers would really need, and not post about my favorite brand of pickled herring, which I've posted about. Now that there's really that's not really a constraint. Now we don't have to satisfy paying customers, and we figure that people are reading the weblog because we like the kinds of things we talk about. We can talk about whatever we like, and I hope that a lot of our readers enjoy the eclecticism of it more than they're annoyed by distractions of subjects that they're not that interested in.
I'm sure they are. One of the things I love about your blog is that, as well as being reactive and short, quick takes and hits, it's also very literate. You write well, you write at length, you consider serious subjects, you know, in a very considered way, it seems.
Well, I very much appreciate your saying so. That's I think, the style that a lot of us on The Conspiracy aspire to. In fact, one of the bases in which I have chosen my co-conspirators has to do with that, that they are people that I generally know quite well and think very highly of, and think that they are good writers as well as good speakers.
Let's talk about The Conspiracy and team bloggery in general. Your conspirators have first names. A lot of them seem to be last name Volokh. How did this happen? Who are they?
Well, it began with Sasha and me. Sasha is my brother, who is just finishing up his JD PhD at Harvard, who had worked in think tanks and has written quite extensively. And then we decided to invite some other people as well. Most of them are academics. A couple are not. Two are anonymous bloggers. One of them is named Juan Non-Volokh, which is, of course, a pseudonym. But other than that, that's all the Volokhs and Non-Volokhs there are. That it just ended up being basically people whom I know and like, who I decided to invite to join us, plus the two anonymous bloggers, plus one other person, Jacob Levy, whom I'm sure I would really like if I knew personally, but it turns out I don't know him personally. I just really liked his blog, and at one point invited him to join us. So that's a somewhat different approach I took in his case. But most of the non-anonymous bloggers are people whom I know well, and whose work I was really quite confident in going in.
Eugene Volokh, how would you describe the politics and what difference it makes? You're listed to the right of Instapundit and Andrew Sullivan on Mark Laser's chart of the great blogs, and yet there are a lot of liberals who say you're absolutely must-reading and you're an inclusive sort of page. What does politics have to do with it?
Let me step back a bit. We're generally range from the moderate to the conservative or libertarian. More libertarian than conservative, although, for example, I like to think of myself as libertarian, but I'm kind of a Republican libertarian rather than a hardcore libertarian. So we do have some moderates. For example, Russell Korobkin, as best I can tell, is smack in the middle of the political spectrum. We don't have anybody who's really on the left, because while I think that a certain degree of diversity in opinion is really helpful to our readers because it gives them a lot of different perspectives, I think if it really covered virtually all points on the political spectrum, then I think it would lose some of its personality. So we are trying to set up something that is appealing to a wide range of people, to obviously conservatives, liberals, and moderates, but also conservatives, libertarians. libertarians and moderates, but also to liberals who agree with us on some things, and even the things they disagree with us on, they think we're making good points. So we're trying to be a big tent, but not a very, very, very big tent. We're trying to occupy a particular part of the political spectrum, a fairly substantial part, but one with still a distinctively somewhat right-of-center character. I should say we're not to the right, I think, of Instapundit and Andrew Sullivan. Probably we're roughly about where they are on ballots, kind of a moderate conservative-ish libertarianism.
What I want to know, Gene Volokh, especially, is the sensibility of the blogosphere itself. Can you describe it? As a feel?
No, I can't.
Style.
And I don't think anybody can. For the same reason that it would be hard to say, well, let's describe the sensibility of books, or let's describe the sensibility of music, or of conversation.
Well, music has a sensibility. People always are saying that traditional media runs to the liberal. I'm just trying to think.
No. But if you talk about music sensibility, if you talk about music, you'd have to include classical music, you'd have to include rap music, you'd have to include, just as with books, you'd have to include technical manuals and computer software, you'd have to include the Bible, you'd have to include all those other things. I'm picking on this notion that somehow you could tell something about blogging. Blogging, it is a medium just like the book or just like music. It can come on all sorts of topics, subject matters, styles of approach, political perspectives, sometimes complete lack of political perspective, for example, if you have blogging about non-political topics. So I think it's a real mistake to try to say something about blogging as a whole, just as it's a mistake to say something about books as a whole. You really have to ask, well, what about this particular set of bloggers, kind of the Instapundit, Andrew Sullivan, Volokh conspiracy crowd? You can say something about that, but I don't think you could say anything about blogging generally.
Well, I'm not so sure. We're accustomed now to believe that the medium is in some fashion the message. There is a kind of pace and an inactivity that goes with reading books. There is a speed and a activism that comes with bloggery. I've described it as Emersonian. It seems to me fundamentally individualistic, expressive, essentially liberating, whether the politics is right or left.
Let me try to probe that a little bit. I certainly agree that there are certain kinds of things you can do with blogs that are easier to do than with other media. So, for example, similarly with books, you could say, well, books focus maybe a little more precise, let's say, at conveying ideas than music. In fact, maybe a lot more precise, because text is more effective at precisely conveying ideas and specific information than music. Fair enough. At that general level, you can make generalizations. Likewise, so with blogging, they tend to be things that are a little shorter on average than certainly a book or even an op-ed in a newspaper. They tend to be a little more timely because of the attributes of the medium. But at the same time, for example, individualistic, media blogs, like, for example, Hit and Run on Reason or Taft on the American Prospect, which are, in some respects, still more individualistic than, let's say, the editorial page, but not necessarily that much more individualistic than the op-ed page. Sometimes they really do try to express the editorial voice of the institution, subject to perhaps some twists brought by individual bloggers. Sometimes they are edited in some measure, like, for example, Glenn Reynolds' MSNBC.com blog is edited in some measure, albeit very lightly edited. So I think even at that point, I'm not sure you can say that much about this. And this is just at this point. I mean, 5-10 years from now, it may be really very different.
Well, you know, it seems to me, again, though, if you were introducing this to a Martian, what you'd notice, not a Martian, a Rip Van Winkle, what you'd notice about blogging is that it has made the media, for example, and the law, the Supreme Court, I think, transparent in a way that they never were before. I mean, there are hundreds, maybe thousands of people second-guessing the news judgment of the New York Times and CBS or whatever, CNN, all the time, round the clock, round the world. We've never had this before. I count that as a kind of major liberation.
Well, you know, I think there is certainly something to what you say. The thing we haven't had isn't so much lots of people second-guessing, but rather lots of people second-guessing the court and other institutions and being able to communicate their second-guessing to more than a couple of people around the
exactly.
dinner table.
Exactly.
So I think in some measure that's right. So I do think that the medium does have certain possible effects on discourse. I think I would just be hesitant to try to say there's a particular feel to blogging as a whole. Let's just be more specific. Current affairs blogs make it easier for people to identify quickly and then spread broadly interesting twists or errors in current affairs reporting or in current events.
Yes.
So, for example, if there is a if there's an error in some newspaper article, it used to be really very difficult to bring that up. The newspaper
of the Jason Blair variety, say.
Yes. Well, let's say on the sub Jason Blair variety, the point where it doesn't it isn't something that the newspaper has to confront because it becomes so glaring. So the newspaper itself might be reluctant to publish criticism, or if it publishes criticism, maybe publish only one or two items several days later. And other newspapers don't think it's really newsworthy to have whole columns devoted to errors in somebody else's work. But now, with blogs, it becomes a lot easier for a lot of people to say, wait a minute, and say quickly, wait a minute, there is a serious error here. And as a result, I do think that that fact-checking the media and others, and in identifying interesting implications of what is being covered, is really something that certain kinds of blogs do well. Again, though, that's an attribute of particular kinds of blogs, the public affairs blogs. Personal blogs, for example, which, as I understand, were the original weblogs, that's not what they're good at. That's not what they're meant to do.
Right. But do we not have a kind of fundamentally new mode of organizing society here? I mean, for example, I find it fascinating that Larry Lessig is giving way on his blog to Howard Dean this week. You were a guest blogger on the Glenn Reynolds Instapundit blog. They're different forms of rallying sort of new causes, finance, thinking, political organization that I find immensely new and different.
You know, maybe it's just my temperament. I tend to see the continuity and be somewhat more skeptical of claims of really radical differentness. I do think that there are certain things in which there are certain differences of degree that are quite large and maybe enough to arise level of difference in kind, that it does become so cheap now for people to communicate their ideas that you now have a much, much greater diversity of voices that are out there. Now, it's not clear how many of them are really reaching an audience, but some of them are, and that's, I think, all to the good. I'm not sure I'd say that this really radically changes the way that that society is organized. Just to take one example. You look at the leading blogs. They tend to be run by people who have already historically had considerable access to the media. That if I wanted, I mean, I write op-eds already. If I wanted to, maybe I could have my own op-ed column that's harder to do, but doable. Same with Glenn Reynolds. Same with Larry Lessig. Obviously, same in some measure with Howard Dean. So I think that there is a fundamental question that isn't yet fully answered with regard to blogging, and that is, given that you've got this huge range of opinion out there, a huge number of blogs out there,
right?
And given that people have very limited time to search around for new blogs, just how much will it shake up the opinion marketplace? One possibility is it won't shake it up at all. But ultimately, nobody will go to the blogs. Everybody will go to CNN.com and NewYorkTimes.com and such. And the blogs, you know, you could write, but nobody's going to read. That's apparently not what's happening. Glenn Reynolds has acquired a readership the size of a small newspaper, and maybe even a medium-sized newspaper. We've acquired the readership the size of a very small newspaper, so there is some effect. Another possibility is people are going to be focusing as much on this kind of stuff as on CNN or MSNBC. So really, ultimately, our voice will be roughly the same volume, metaphorically speaking, or more precisely, about as many people will pay attention to what we say as will pay attention to what CNN says. That would be a radical change. Not happening, I think, even if you take the aggregate of all of blogging. So you've got something in between, and how and where in between that is, that's going to end up being is hard to tell. There does seem to be now a network of bloggers that are able to, sometimes at least, get certain kinds of responses from the media, in part because we suspect that journalists actually disproportionately do read blogs.
Right.
So we may have a smaller readership than a lot of things, but it may be in some respects an average, a little more influential. The true magnitude of this effect is going to be hard to see. One possibility, incidentally, is that what we'll have is we'll have something like the traditional media where there are a bunch of really high-profile voices and some medium-profile voices. And really the average person isn't going to be much heard. But the hierarchy is going to be a lot more permeable, that a lot of people will be able to get into kind of the medium-level voice category just by their own blogging rather than by actually being an employee of a newspaper or of a magazine.
It seems to me, I don't want to overhype the blog scene, but my own observation would be that the elite measured by adrenaline is already well into blogging, that there's an authenticity, there's a confidence of voice that outweighs the small numbers. There's an energy and a conviction there that I think is going to have huge influence.
Well, I hope you're right. I'm just not really positive.
Well, we'll see. You reported that you had a record high 17,000 visitors last Friday. Do you have a notion of what drives the traffic to the Volokh conspiracy?
At one point I went through our referral logs, and it turns out that about half of our visits were from InstaFund. Half of the
from Glenn Reynolds. Interesting.
Came from InstaPundit. Now, excuse me. Half. I'm sorry. Let me be more precise. Half of the ones that had a referrer attached to them.
Yes.
Came from InstaPundit, and quite a few, maybe about half now, maybe even a bit more, actually don't come from a referrer. They come directly, essentially, from their own, from the bookmarks on their own browser. But even if they come directly to our site, they must have found our site somehow, and we suspect that it's probably through the same places as we now get through our referrers, which is mostly InstaPundit. So Glenn Reynolds has really become a very important force here, because the people who are interested in at least the kinds of blogs that we put out, essentially somewhat center to right of center public policy blogs, apparently read InstaPundit a lot and take seriously the suggestions to go visit some other article. He's tremendously influential, at least in this particular corner of blogging. Interestingly, we've gotten one of the reasons, incidentally, for this may be that he knows us both personally and through our work, and actually links often to us. So it's a combination of the fact that people visit his site, people pay attention to his link recommendations, and he also, in fact, often recommends that people go to us. So I suspect that if you somehow could analyze this, you'll find that a tremendous number of blogs that have become of moderate significance or more in the last year or year and a half really owe it largely to InstaPundit.
Interesting. You make a lot of favorites lists, including Glenn Reynolds. I just wonder, what are your top 3, 5, 10 favorite weblogs where you find something interesting and wonderful?
Well, there are a lot of weblogs I really like. There, unfortunately, are relatively few weblogs that I can visit really often. The one that I visit most often is InstaPundit. The others that I visit with some regularity are How Appealing, the Howard Bashman's blog on legal issues, or legal issues, recent legal decisions, Andrew Sullivan, Mickey Kaus on Slate's Kaus Files. Those are probably the chief ones that at least come to mind. There certainly are lots of others that I think are very good and that I visit not infrequently, such as Ox Blog, for example, and some others. One difficulty, again, is that there are only so many hours in a day.
Yeah.
Plus, also, I count on InstaPundit to go through a lot of these things. So I visit the sites that he recommends.
Don't we all? Eugene Volokh, this is tremendously interesting. May the power and the force be with you. This is you've got a wonderful page, and you're very generous to chat with us.
Well, thank you very much. I much appreciate your calling. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.